wife that holds the guardian ring. Spin let loose, but wearing thin, but wearing thin, but biting through the shifting power leans to you. And the cord is on a wheel.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for Wednesday morning call-in talk radio here on Kibu Community Radio, where the time is almost 41 minutes before 8 o'clock here on Kibu. And the number to call to join in the conversation this morning is 503-231-8187. Well, I want to wish you all a happy new year and welcome to the year of the probably most notorious scandals in the history of the United States. And we're starting out the year in a really great way with the plea bargaining of Jack Abramoff, the notorious lobbyist in Washington, D.C., who defrauded Indian tribes of many, many, many millions of dollars, along with his partner, Mike Scanlon. And Jack Abramoff is also a very close associate of Tom DeLay. And what's going to be really fascinating is watching a whole lot of stuff crumble in the Republican infrastructure in the coming weeks as people are scrambling to give back money, massive amounts of money that they received from Abramoff and from the Indian tribes that he represented. And as the Republicans do as much as they can about damage control. So I wanted to talk today some about the Abramoff issue, as well as probably talking some about the other great scandal that's been emerging in the last few weeks that President Bush, or actually Resident Bush, authorized the National Security Agency to spy on American citizens, both on their email and telephone conversations. And at first it was said that it was just between suspected Al-Qaeda suspects and people and foreign either overseas phone calls or emails, and that it was supposedly conversations that were intercepted were initiated from overseas. But it turns out that that isn't the case, that they were conversations intercepted that were initiated locally as well, and that some of these suspects might very likely have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. In fact, there's a growing investigation now of a number of peace groups that have also been eavesdropped on. And this is very reminiscent of the COINTELPRO program under Richard Nixon and a lot of the snooping that went on during the Nixon administration against his enemies and his famous enemies list. And I think we're going to be seeing that George Bush has an enemies list at least as long as Nixon's, and that he is using methods that are at least as illegal as Nixon. And so we also are beginning this year of 2006 with the word impeachment rolling off more than just a few radical leftist lips. It seems to be something that is entering into the mainstream lexicon as well. So we'll talk about those two scandals today. And if you want to give a want to talk on the air today about either one of these things, give a call at 503-231-8187. Well, I just want to run over, you haven't followed this Jack Abramoff story that's going on. I just wanted to just give a little bit of background and sort of basis on a wonderful graphic that was in the Washington Post yesterday called Jack Abramoff Galaxy, and has a picture of Jack Abramoff at the center of the galaxy and all these arms projecting in many different directions that are all interconnected. But we'll sort of go through his business interests and how that has influenced politicking in Washington. The first thing that got him in trouble was that he has been representing supposedly a number of Indian tribes who have casinos, either wanted to get casinos, wanted to keep their casinos open, or were struggling to get their casinos reopened. And Abramoff represented them supposedly, but what in fact he was doing, and he billed them for millions and millions of dollars, but he was actually pitting one tribe against another. So there'd be a tribe, this is particularly in Texas, of course, where else, and also in Louisiana. So a tribe has a casino, and it's being threatened to be shut down, and it turns out that one of the forces trying to get this tribe's casino shut down is another tribe that wants to open a casino. And connection of and collection of far-right groups and religious right groups and these moralist groups along with other state interests, would band together to try to shut down this one casino. At the same time, of course, it was for the advantage of this other Indian tribe. Well, then, of course, there was the same thing was happening on the other side, that the tribe that was trying to get its a casino opened was also being prevented from doing that by the same forces. And so Abramoff, in fact, was playing one tribe off against another, and he did that in several different locations in California and Louisiana and Texas. And it was very interesting to see that this moralistic money that was being used to shut down one tribe was actually being used also to encourage gambling casinos on the behalf of another tribe. So that was the first thing where Abramoff was kind of stopped in his tracks. So actually, the word about that started coming out over a year ago. And he has been investigated, I think, since the investigation started in 2004. But then there's another issue which is equally interesting and perhaps even more potentially harmful. It's pretty horrible that he defrauded these tribes. And part of the settlement agreement that he's made is that he's going to be paying back, I think, about $25 million to the tribes, which is actually, I think, a small part of what he actually bilked them for. But the other really fascinating issue is that he took over a casino cruise line called Sun Cruise Casinos running out of Florida back in 2000. And it turned out that he was able to leverage money to borrow to buy this casino from a Greek by the name of Gus Boulis, who had been very, very successful, but he'd had to sell the fleet because he was not an American citizen, and there were some issues there. So Abramoff and his buddy Adam Keaton leveraged their money by faking a wire for $23 million that they actually didn't receive. And this is where they're getting charged with telephone fraud, I guess. A mail fraud, rather. They dismissed the telephone and the wire fraud charges as part of the plea agreement. But the thing that's even more interesting, besides the fact that they ran this operation into the ground and they basically used the money from the operation to pay for lavish lobbying back in Washington, comes back around to all this money that's being raised to lobby a number of Republican, mainly, and a few Democratic congressmen, but very, very largely Republicans, and most notably Tom DeLay, and then Bob Nee from Ohio is another one who's taken thousands and thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, and in some cases, I think, hundreds of thousands of dollars from Jack Abramoff. So anyway, they bilk this, they drain the resources from Sun Cruise Casinos. But the other thing that's very interesting is that shortly after they bought the casino and they had some problems with Boulis, who didn't like the way they were running the operation and saw that they were basically just using it as a shell to drain it and use the money for other things, he was trying to get it back. Well, he wound up dead, killed, as the Miami police said, in a gangland-style slaying. He was fired with automatic weapon fire in his car as he was boxed in by two cars leaving his office one night. And recently, I think it was back in October or November, there were three people that were indicted for first-degree murder for killing Boulis. And two of those people happened to be people that have worked closely with Adam Keaton and who Abramoff actually paid a tidy sum. I think Keaton's the one who paid the sum, but paid them a fair amount of money. Let's see if I can get the, he. Keaton paid one of the hitmen, whose name is Moscatiello, who's an old friend of his. He paid Moscatiello and his daughter $145,000 for catering a wedding or something, and then he paid this other guy, Ferrari, $95,000 for security services. But it looks an awful lot like they were actually paid to be hitmen. And so this is something that's being investigated. And meanwhile, so far, Abramoff and Keaton haven't been charged in the crimes, but this is an investigation that's still open. So it turns out that Jack Abramoff may not just be stealing millions of dollars from people and unlawfully trying to control political decisions and make political decisions through influence peddling, but they actually involved in mob-style murder. So interesting guy, and could be the undoing of the Republican Party as we know it now. So if you want to join the conversation, the number to call is 503-231-8187. It's about 12 minutes before 8 o'clock here on Kibu Community Radio. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, your last comments about, you know, the possibility of a murder might explain something that in the way that I heard, well, that I read that Abramoff made his statement to the court or to his attorneys. And I read this morning. This is not a direct quote, but he was clearly using words like wrong. He said, "I asked forgiveness of the American people," something to that effect. And I know he also hoped for the graces of the, quote, an almighty God. So he knows that he's done something grave. And what I'm wondering about is I wonder who will be the next, who will be the first religious right leader to say, we have wrong, we have corruption, in the White House. Will it be James Dobson, Billy Graham's son? You know what I mean?
Well, it's an interesting thought because one of the people that's closely tied with Abramoff is Ralph Reed, who used to be executive director of the Christian Coalition, and who has actually moved into the secular world in a really big way. And he was real involved with, on the one hand, he was working with an organization that was trying to stop gambling in Louisiana, and he received lots and lots and lots of money from Abramoff. But, of course, it was all part of the scam, which was to prevent, I mean, they were both basically taking money from both Indian tribes and pitting them against each other and giving money, lobbying on behalf of both tribes basically to stop their casinos, or in some cases to help another tribe get a casino. And so it turns out that while on the surface it looked like Ralph Reed was trying to fight gambling, on the other hand, he was actually helping promote gambling by helping this other tribe.
Let me tell you this real quick. I think that if there turns out to be some significant marks in a kind of an appeal process, I believe one of them will be when one of the religious right leaders says there is something wrong on the Potomac in Denmark.
Well, the interesting thing is that I doubt that it's going to be
Potomac.
Yeah, I doubt that it's going to be like Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or probably James Dobson. I mean, they all are so entwined in this themselves.
I know, but they're dealing with a moral code, the Bible, for God's sake. Yeah, for God's sake. You know, they've got to at some point say corruption is corruption.
But then they have to atone themselves. I mean, I guess they could do who was that guy, Tammy Faye and Jim Baker? They could do something like that, you know, where they atone for their sins. But of course, this is on such a bigger level than any of the scandals that any of the religious right leaders have found themselves in the past. I mean, this involves a lot more money, a lot more influence peddling, and a possible murder. So it's pretty slimy business here, and it's certainly. I think it shows really the corruption of the system at the real core. And the other thing that's very interesting, of course, is that they're also, so, I mean, the Republicans have still, I mean, some Republicans are backing away from Abramoff, but a lot of them still aren't. I mean, you haven't seen, I mean, they back away from him only, like the Tom DeLay, I guess, is not wanting to be seen on the same platform with Abramoff now at fundraisers. But as far as actually tackling this problem through legislation and things like that, you're not seeing a lot of the Republican leadership standing up and saying that they need to really change legislation so that these things can't happen again.
Well, God help them all, right?
Okay. Well, thanks for calling. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. We're talking today about the scandal involving Jack Abramoff. They've been calling him the Uber lobbyist or the mega lobbyist, but this guy who, along with Tom DeLay and Grover Norquist, really helped to change the face of lobbying in Washington over the last little over 10 years, and used to be that lobbyists lobbied Republicans and Democrats, and that they lobbyists were, you know, there was like sort of equal time and that there was equal access to money to firms that were lobbying a Democratic Republican causes, and they shifted the landscape so drastically that the only lobbyists who would receive any kind of money or access were the ones who were going to be lobbying for strictly Republican causes. And as we saw, a huge shift to the right as far as the kinds of money and influence that was happening in Washington. And a lot of this was being engineered and bankrolled, well, not that much bankrolled by Jack Abramoff, but because it turns out that he has that much money. He basically takes money from one source, stealing from one group or entity to finance another scam that he's putting off on the other side. But he seemed to do a whole lot of stuff with smoke and mirrors. But at any rate, we've seen that the whole high-pressure lobbying that has taken over Washington in the last 10 years is primarily a Republican concern. And that's why the scandal is going to hit much harder on Republicans than Democrats. And I've been thinking a lot about the, well, there were a couple scandals that happened at the, in the 80s and 90s. One was the savings and loan scandal, which took down a bunch of really good Democrats, particularly Alan Cranston, who, you know, been an anti-war leader in the House and a very progressive Democrat, but had been on the take with the savings and loan scandal, and certainly lost his credibility, lost his seat, and died in ignominy. And the only Republican that I recall that was caught up in that whole scandal was John McCain, who it turned out was completely exonerated. He had not been on the take. In fact, he had tried to, because there's one thing about McCain is that it seems in most levels he has a certain amount of integrity. Certainly he did around this, and he in fact was trying to blow the whistle on what was going on with the savings and loan scandal. And then there was also the House banking scandal, which involved a lot of Democrats and some Republicans, but some of the Democrats are thinking that that's one of the things that might have made it easier for the Newt Gingrich revolution in 1994, when the Republicans took back the House and Senate both. So it could be that things have turned around. And that's one of the things that I'd like to know what you think. If, in fact, you think this is like sort of the death knell for Republican power as we know it, is this a scandal that can be blown under, you know, pushed under the carpet like so many other things have under the Bush administration? Or is this something that, in fact, is going to really be the undoing of the Republican Party as we know it now? And if you want to join the conversation, give a call at 503-231-8187. It's almost 5 minutes before 8 o'clock here on KBOO Community Radio. I wanted to talk about some of the connections, some more of the connections. Besides the tribes that Abramoff represented, he also had a lot of dealings with the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, along with Mike Scanlon, and they represented the islands, which is a great bastion for sweatshops and a place where many, many Chinese workers are sort of dragged off to work under subhuman conditions. And there was a lot of investigation of what was going on. It's an American protectorate in the Pacific. And during the Clinton administration, there was a lot of efforts to crack down on what was happening and to impose minimum wage laws and all kinds of worker protection. Well, Scanlon and Abramoff lobbied heavily against that, didn't have much of an ear until the Bush administration came in 2001. The Bush administration immediately went along with the desires of Scanlon and Abramoff's clients, and the wretched conditions in the Northern Mariana Islands continue. And this is also a place where there's been a lot of bribes. A lot of trips have been paid for Republican congressional and members and senators to visit the islands, enjoy the resort, five-star resort quality of the islands. Of course, not really look at the sweatshops and see how people that work there are living. And there's been an awful lot of fraud and bribery connected with that. Anyway, we've got some more callers, and if you want to join the conversation, give a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Ian, and this is my first time on the air, and I just wanted to, I sort of had an observation in general about Abramoff and this sort of new breed of Republicans that's come along after Gingrich. I remember when Gingrich finally left the House, he spoke about members of his party behaving like barracudas or even cannibals. And I think what he was talking about is there seems to be an element of the Republican Party that seems to have gone way beyond politics as usual and seems to have gone into the realm of extreme illegality and undermining democracy that I tend to think of as fascist. And I think that the fascist wing of the Republican Party is exactly who Abramoff was the money man for. And I'd be real interested to see, once all the names come out, how many of these people are at real choke points on committees and so forth. Like, I noticed he's on what committee is it? Well, it's like Ways and Means, or is it some sort of House Rules and Committee? Do you know who that is?
I don't know. I have to do some quick checking here to see what committee he's on. A lot of the people of course, Tom DeLay, who was the major choke point of the House, but a lot of these people are on major committees that dealt with Indian affairs. But then there's also people who are on committees that would deal with labor issues and that had to do with the Northern Mariana Islands, and that was the other, you know, the big piece. I mean, there's it's just kind of interesting that there's like these three different areas of major or two areas of major bribery for lobbying for legislative change. That's the Northern Mariana Islands and the tribal recognition and tribal casino recognition. And then there's this whole scandal going along in Florida with the cruise ship. And then it has to do with there's a whole thing with him channeling money from these nonprofits that were basically fronts for lobbying. And the nonprofits were the American International Center and the National Center for Public Policy Research. And then you see where this ties with Grover Norquist, who received lots of money as a consultant. And that gets you back really to the heart of the Republican Party, because Grover Norquist is a real powerful force behind the whole agenda of the current right-wing Congress. And then, of course,
I was just going to say, I really feel, though, that there's something here that's deeper and darker than merely the Republican Party, and I actually think is almost unfair, because there's been corruption in American politics forever, but the level of what we're seeing in the attempt to roll back civil liberties and, indeed, I think, establish perhaps even a permanent Republican government, whether it's just de facto because they're unbeatable at the polls, or whether it's, you know, more totalitarian than that, seems to be the real long-term goal and strategy of a group of these guys. And I feel like Abramoff is just the money man behind this movement, and that where he connects and who he connects to, you're going to get to see how this apparatus works, because I do feel that a network that's been sort of burbling underground since Nixon, and sort of the people who started to come in and have that attitude under Nixon, that, you know, by any means necessary politics, which in my opinion is sort of the hallmark of, you know, what in the 30s was called fascism. I really feel that these guys are not interested in even hardball politics, but are going for something much much darker than that. And I was wondering if you had any comment about that. And I realize that that's a bit of postulating and theorizing on my part, but I really feel that if people don't take this threat to democracy that we're seeing emerge from the Republican Party more seriously, that we could have some pretty serious problems. And I'll take my comments on the off the air.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. I totally agree with the caller that this is definitely this was a method to make sure that this country was a single-party country forever under the control of the Republicans. And what's been unearthed is the whole strategy that Abramoff and Tom DeLay and Grover Norquist and Ralph Reed were using to do this. And it's like a trail of very, very dirty money and incredible acts of illegality and cynicism, and that the ways that the Indian tribes, for instance, were being used, it had nothing to do with Indian sovereignty, even though I think people got confused. And some of the money that went to Democrats, and it was a very small amount of money, actually went to Democrats through this whole scam. But the money that did was given to mostly by tribes, and tribes who traditionally give to Democratic candidates over Republicans. So it was Abramoff's tribes were the first tribes to sort of change that trend, and who gave way more money to, I think, 30% more money to Republicans than to Democrats, the three major tribes that he represented. But that what we're seeing, that the money from the tribes and some of Abramoff's other shady business dealings was ways to raise money to influence politics in ways that had never been done before, and that he was in close cahoots with Tom DeLay, that Mike Scanlon, who is Abramoff's one of his co-conspirators, was in fact, I guess, Tom DeLay's chief of staff, or, you know, high up in Tom DeLay's administration. And there's two other people that are very interesting to see who are way up. One is David Safavian, who was a former Office of Management and Budget contracting official, very high up in the OMB. He's been indicted on charges of lying, and he stepped down. And this was the first, that was the first fall that happened with anybody in the government taking a hit for connections with Abramoff. And he was involved with a whole lot of unholy kinds of transactions that were going on, and a lot of influence peddling that Abramoff did. And the other one is L. Stephen Griles, who was formerly the number two official at the Interior Department. He's somebody who got profiled a lot on Bill Moyers Now last year, and I think it wasn't just some very unsavory things that he did around tribal recognition and casinos, but I think he also had some sweetheart anti-environmental policies that were like favors to friends of his in the energy industry. And then he stepped down from working for the government and immediately became a lobbyist. And that was a good example of what Bill Moyers kept hitting home in the last year of his program about the revolving door in Washington, D.C. So L. Stephen Grouse is another very interesting person to look at and to see how, you know, here he was very, very high up in the Interior Department and how he was taking all this money from Abramoff and doing all kinds of favors for him. So if you want to join in the conversation, give a call at 503-231-8187. It's about 3.5 minutes after 8 o'clock here on Kibu Community Radio at 90.7 in the Portland metro area, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, and 100.7 in the Mid-Willamette Valley. We're talking this morning about the great Jack Abramoff scandal, and probably would like to talk some about President Bush's snooping on Americans and the possibility of impeachment as a result of all these things that are happening. So give a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
It's been a while since I've checked in, and I just want to say thanks again for another year. And as always, you seem to come to work very prepared this morning.
Well, I downloaded, I don't know how many pages of things that I mean, I've been following this. I was saying to Liam Delta, who is my substitute engineer, by the way, I just wanted to make an aside that Aaron Sexton Saylor, who's my regular engineer, is the proud mother of a new baby that was born on December 27th. I think her name is Vivian. I got an email picture of her, and I'm hoping to see her soon. But anyway, Erin is taking the month off for maternity leave. And Liam Delta, who was the engineer here for quite a long time, he's back helping us out, and I want to thank him. Anyway, I was saying to him this morning that it was kind of interesting to finally have an opportunity to talk about this stuff on the air. I've been following the story with fascination for the last 2 years, and there's been many opportunities recently where we should have been talking about it on the air, but we had other things to do, like talk about environmental issues and the whole communities project. So I'm happy to finally deal with this subject. And I thought the timing of Abramoff's plea copping was just yesterday. So I thought, great, we can really talk about this.
Well, I'm not going to add anything to the Abramoff scandal because I think you've thoroughly covered it. And I think at this point, I think it would be interesting to segue into the NSA spying on America. I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen or watch yesterday's Democracy Now! Program.
I heard parts of it, yeah.
It was quite enlightening. They had a NSA official, an ex-NSA official, who had been fired within the last 6 months for bringing up this very issue to his superiors, and was fired for it. And I'd just like to point out that, you know, our government has grown so much, and it is so closely tied to business and big business, really, really large business. And it's not surprising that you have guys like Abramoff, you know, working these kind of deals. And it makes me wonder, along the lines of the NSA spying, I'm not so really concerned about them spying on me per se, but you know, there's a lot of people within the government that are in positions to actually investigate these people and to bring them down. And it really makes you wonder about their safety and about, you know, where these wiretaps are directed and how they're using the NSA to thwart justice. And when it comes to these issues, and it makes me wonder, I've done a lot of reading and research about the espionage that goes on within our country legally and illegally, and it makes me wonder why we as Americans, when we seem to value, at least rhetorically value, this ideal of democracy and freedom and an ideal of transparency when it comes to our government, why we continue to fund institutions, very large institutions that take quite a large budget from the American coffers every year, like the NSA and the CIA, whose sole purpose is to spy and is to work in a deceitful way around the globe and here at home, even though there are laws that prevent, are supposedly on the books. It doesn't seem to do much difference, make any difference, but there are laws on the books that prevent them from doing this. I happen to know some of the reading that I've done, you know, the National Security Agency has the largest computer in the United States. It is capable of crunching 1 billion binary calculations per second. It takes 250,000 gallons of coolant to keep this thing cold. They are able to use extremely sophisticated programs to filter and sift through data as it comes in. And when you look at what's happened
just in the last year or two in this administration. I think it really, you know, it's really, where are we as Americans? Are we so distracted by the latest movie coming out, so distracted by all just a myriad of things that we cannot bring to bear the type of focus and intense pressure that this government really is aching for at this time to really rein in our government and really truly bring some accountability to this American experiment? And if we can't do that now, I don't really see where it's ever going to happen, because this thing is just so big and so out of control.
Well, I actually think that we're starting to see a lot of public discussion of this in a way that we haven't seen since the same things, these similar programs are going on during the Nixon years. And
yeah.
I don't know if you were remembering, if you were politically active back then or how old you are, but I mean, what's happening now is probably not a whole, in terms of domestic spying, is not a whole lot more outrageous than what was happening. I'm not sure it's any more outrageous than what was happening under Nixon, which was very outrageous, and that stuff was all reined in when it was revealed through the Pentagon Papers and the Watergate trial and all the things that ensued post-Watergate, that there were a lot of laws that were put in place, including FISA, which was an effort to try to stop government spying, illegal spying on American citizens. And, I mean, FISA...
Even the FISA courts, which I heard yesterday, this is a guy that worked in block operations within the NSA. He described the FISA court and how it works. And they get 20,000 requests per year in the FISA court. Do the math. That's a lot of requests every day. They are basically rubber stamping FISA requests. And then beyond that...
I'm going to interject, because actually one of the things, and I heard this, Amy Goodman was talking about this yesterday too, that one of the reasons why they think that the Bush administration wanted to go around FISA was that the kinds of snooping they wanted to do were things that they wouldn't have been able to get FISA warrants for. And so FISA warrants, I mean, I have sort of uneasy feeling about FISA and how it has been basically, in the past, a rubber stamp for... the kinds of surveillance that feels like a violation of our First Amendments. However, the fact that a number of the FISA court judges have really stood up against this program, and one of them, I guess, resigned from the court because they feel like the court's been compromised totally by what the Bush administration is doing, what the NSA is doing. So there is a difference, I think, between what FISA was set up to do, at least, and what this, and the fact that there was enough credibility around FISA that the Bush administration felt like they had to go around it, because what they were asking for wasn't even going to be able to be rubber stamped by FISA.
Yeah, well, that says a lot about this administration and where they're at. I mean, in light of that. And, you know, it's not that I am, you know, we live in a very complicated world. There's just absolutely no doubt about it. And our government is an extremely complicated apparatus. And there are many, it's not monolithic, there are many power bases and power structures within the government. And it's not an easy thing to understand at all. It's taken me years and years to get my mind around it, and still, I'm just still learning lots. But this administration, and I think the Republicans during this era, have really stooped to a new level. And let's not forget about the Lewis Libby scandal. That particular scandal, him revealing the knowings of a non-official cover CIA operative who was working in the realm of undercovering channels for purchasing fissionable materials that could be used for dirty bombs or nuclear weapons of some type. This person, in the name of Valerie Plame, was handed over to the press. Now, if that doesn't warrant some serious scrutiny within this government from our media, there's been a little bit of a blackout on this. You know, I don't know. It just really shows the level to which these people are willing to play dirty pool and jeopardize the well-being of the public.
Well, I actually think that the whole Valerie Plame affair is going to be back in the media. I mean, the day that Scooter Libby was indicted, I was actually in Florence the night before I was flying back here. It was the first time I'd watched American television. in a month, and we were watching CNN, which just did continual coverage for hours and hours and hours. I mean, the same kind of coverage they did for Hurricane Katrina. And it was, even when they had nothing to say, they were covering it. It was a very big story, I think. And it sort of shocked the media in the same way that perhaps Hurricane Katrina shocked the media into have to covering what was really going on. And I think what we've been seeing the last year has been a series of seismic shocks to the political body of this country. And I think that, you know, the Jack Abramoff shock, I mean, a lot of us have been following it, but I think that it really broke yesterday when he was... He copped his plea, and then it's like, okay, now we're going to see what's going to... Now the people that have been hiding, you know, and trying to disengage from him are can't do it anymore. People like Tom DeLay in particular, and Bob Nies, and Comrade Burns, and John T. Doolittle, and the fallout is really going to start happening. And this also, I was reading an article yesterday about the connections between Abramoff and Bush, and the fact that Abramoff raised $100,000 for Bush in the 2004 election. And so even though Bush can say, oh, I don't know him, well, I mean, he does. And so I think we're starting, so this is the latest in a series of seismic shocks, but each one has shaken the media out of their old complacency. Though I have to say, I watched Nightline for the first time since Ted Koppel left. I guess it was on, it was last Friday night. And I'd been reading an article, a media critic, who talked about how Ted Koppel was replaced by a three-headed monster, and that one of them was a tabloid reporter from England. And I didn't get to see that person, but this woman who I'd never seen before, who was a total, like, innocuous, drivel host, and they're doing the same thing that actually drives me crazy about David Brancaccio's Now, where they take you live, they broadcast live from some place. Like, she was at Times Square because it was the night before New Year's Eve. But there was, like, very little content in the show at all. And Ted Koppel, who's not exactly my media hero, actually started doing some excellent journalism in the last few months before he left the show. And I was thinking last night when I wanted to turn on Nightline and, you know, see what they have to say about Jack Abramoff, and I thought, no, I don't. Nightline is gone. Nightline is not a show to watch anymore. So that's one thing that worries me, that Nightline was one of the few serious news programs on the mainstream media, and now we're kind of relying on the press, I mean the printed press, because I don't think that the TV, I don't think there's anything left of serious news on television. But hopefully Brian Williams, who learned a lot in New Orleans in September, will spearhead the charge of journalism with integrity. We'll see if, you know, he can kind of follow in the footsteps of Peter Jennings.
Well, you know, Barbara, you are one of the great, as far as I'm concerned, you're one of the great journalists of our time. We're very fortunate to have you here. And for future shows, it would be great for you to tackle this subject, because it's something that I and many other people in this town who are of noteworthy, not that I am, but I know some people that are dealing in this realm, are very concerned with. And that is the fact that we cannot really, you know, journalism has taken a slow and steady turn for the worst, and it's very difficult to find reliable information. And I've been doing a lot of research myself in electronic media. There's a lot of really good programs out there. They're not easily accessed. Democracy Now! And Free Speech TV come to mind. And
well, they're pretty easily accessed, actually. Amy Goodman's on over 400 stations, so she's doing pretty well.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't have internet access or don't have cable, and I think that's
But she's also on a lot of broadcast. I mean, she's on a lot of broadcast stations. It took a long time to get her on here on KABU, like 8 years. But in the rest of the country, on progressive media, she's been on since 1996. And so she's on actually a number of NPR stations, and she's on some PBS stations. So it's not just cable. I mean, she is definitely getting very well penetrated. And one thing I admire about Amy is that she didn't just focus on, like, community radio or public radio. She's doing the whole thing from the internet through. They also do podcasting, through cable TV. I mean,
they're on it.
But also on mainstream stuff as well. So
they're on it for sure. And I think it would be interesting to just bring these up so people could have, you know, just the food for thought. And I just want to add, you had a caller before who mentioned about the right wing. I just got a book for him if he's interested. Richard Brock's Blinded by the Right is an excellent book and gives detail. David Brock's Blinded by the Right. And a lot of detail into the history of the right wing, involvement in all the think tank development that they've went through post Nixon, and where they went to during the Clinton years, and I think that's an excellent book.
Yeah, also he's got a very good website, MediaMatters.org.
Yes.
Yeah, which he really tracks a lot of stuff. And then another interesting person who came from the right is John Dean, who's been calling for Bush's impeachment for about 2 years now. But he's got, I think, some very good legal cases to support his calls. I mean, he's basically said that George Bush is the first president to admit to impeachable offenses when he admitted that he, had authorized and stands behind his authorization of the snooping. And also, I think that Dean's website is finelaw.com, I think. I'm not sure if it's .com or .org. But anyway,
well, Bush definitely is not the brightest bolt on the tree. And, that guy, he deserves whatever is coming his way. That's all I got.
Yeah, well, I think I'm optimistic a lot's coming his way this year, so it'll be an interesting year to watch.
It will, and I look forward to hearing some shows and hearing some other people, so I'm going to say goodbye.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, and thanks for the compliments.
All right, bye-bye.
And the number to call is 503-231-8187. It's about 18 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock here on KBOO. And we're talking today about the scandals involving the super lobbyist, uber lobbyist Jack Abramoff, and his cohorts Michael Scanlon, who was connected with bilking Indian tribes, and also his other cohort, Adam Keaton, who was involved with bilking a company called San Cruz Casinos and may actually have been involved in a mob hit of the former owner of the casinos, these Cruz casinos that Abramoff and Keaton bought in 2000 under false pretenses using fake money. So if you want to join the conversation, give a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air. Let's see if we can find our caller.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
This is very interesting. I'm not informed as well as you are, but this the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which funds the various tribes, there's no more bureaucracy with a history of corruption than the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Abramoff has nothing to do with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. That's a whole other issue where they've defrauded tribes of their trust money and stuff like that. But Abramoff is doing this on his own without the help of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Well, no, but no, not directly, of course. Yeah. But, this, this brings to mind an issue here in Oregon, of course. Casino issue out in the gorge, and the way politics finds its way in wherever there's money available, it's very interesting. There's a guy here in Portland that's he's sometimes billed as an analyst or a consultant or whatever, and he goes on the radio. I'll say his name's Bergstein, and anyway, he goes on radio talk shows here promoting the casino up in up in the gorge, and I'd sure like to know what kind of cash they're laying on him. The tribe is laying on this guy. He usually works for Democrats. He's a consultant who helps Democrats get elected sometimes, but he also goes on the radio and on television as a political analyst. I don't know. To me, he's sleaze unlimited. He comes from New York, and he's working to get this casino in the gorge going, and he goes on the radio and tells about all this glorious family wage jobs that they are going to be available at this.
Well, actually, I've talked to the tribes about the casino, and I maybe have a different perspective on it than a lot of environmentalists have, but I don't see it as just this evil lurking, ready to pour out of the Cascade Locks. I mean, Cascade Locks wants it for some good reasons, because Cascade Locks is a community without any economic base at all, and it would actually provide family wage jobs. And the plan for the casino
it's
not going to be a Las Vegas style casino at all. It's going to be be alcohol free, smoke free. It's going to be a total green building. It's going to involve a lot more than just gambling. It's going to be a whole conference center. It'd be kind of more like Spirit Mountain. And
what are they paying you?
They're not paying me anything. No, I actually started out feeling very opposed to it, but the more that I've learned about the casino, and actually a Native American friend of mine said that what she likes about the casinos is that they stop cutting the trees down the reservation.
Oh, I see. Well, what about the traffic issues and the pollution issues?
Well, I haven't actually seen reports that convince me that there's going to be that many more cars going through the gorge for the casino than there already go through it. And I think that if you want to deal with traffic and pollution, this, particularly pollution, then you need to look at things that are more polluting, like the Three Mile Canyon Dairy on the east end of the gorge and some of the industry out there. So I wouldn't just focus. I think that there's a lot of problems in the gorge. I think that this proposed casino is one of the least one of them. But also, I feel like this is not, I don't feel real prepared to talk about the casino today. It's not something I've spent a lot of time thinking about, actually, or learning about. And I'd rather be talking about Jack Abramoff and issues that I have done a whole lot more research on. So we can talk about the casino some other time. I think we lost that caller, actually. Are you still there, caller? Nope, we lost that caller. Anyway, if you want to join the conversation, we're talking today about the great scandal monger Jack Abramoff and his galaxy, which includes Mike Scanlon, former aide to Tom DeLay, and this guy, Adam Keaton, who was Abramoff's cohort in taking over this series of cruise ship casinos in Florida 6 years ago. And Keaton has all kinds of organized crime links and may, in fact, be linked to a mob hit. And this is the great world, the galaxy of which Republicans have been swimming around in for the last over 10 years, receiving a great deal of kickback money from Abramoff in return for political favors. And it's all unraveling as Abramoff copped a plea with the Justice Department yesterday and will be naming names. And so, again, if you want to join the conversation, give a call at 503-231-8187. It's about 24 minutes after 8 o'clock here on KBOO Community Radio. This is Locus Focus. And coming up at 9 o'clock on the KBOO Bucks Show, guests include Bill Sinnott, commander of the Portland Police Traffic Division, and Greg Raisman, who is Portland Department of Transportation's traffic safety specialist. They will discuss projects they are working to make the streets safer for cyclists. At 10 o'clock on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller speaks with Lily Coney from the Electronic Privacy Information Center and John Young from Cryptomeme.org about legal and illegal domestic government surveillance. At 11 o'clock on Democracy Now!, the topic is the Abramoff case. Believe it or not, guests include Peter Stone, a staff reporter for the National Journal, ABC's Brian Ross, researcher Judd Ligham, and representatives of Indian tribes defrauded by Abramoff. And I think that's another very important thing, that the Indian tribes, even though they do have a lot more money as a result of the casinos than they had maybe 20 years ago, that the tribes are hardly the kinds of big-time capitalist enterprises as some of these other operatives that Abramoff works with. And for these tribes to have been defrauded probably over $100 million is a huge amount of money to take out of Indian country and money that could have been used for much more valuable things than, as it turns out. The tribes thought they were making an investment. They are actually kind of, and it reminds me of a lot of lawyers that have represented tribes in the past against mining companies, particularly some really outrageous things that happened with the Hopi and the Navajo in the Southwest with Peabody Coal Company, who basically ripped off Indian land, and they were really taken by this lawyer who was really working for the coal company, but, you know, built the tribes for hundreds of millions of dollars again. And I think that Abramoff is, I can't remember the name of that lawyer, but he was a notorious crook, and I think Abramoff is in that same company. So again, if you want to join the conversation, give a call at 503-231-8187. It's 26 minutes after 8 o'clock. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Phyllis Schlafly. Is she a lobbyist?
No, she's not a lobbyist, exactly. No, Phyllis Schlafly is the head of Eagle Forum, which is a right-wing women's organization.
Oh, okay. Another thing, these people like Abramoff. And fascist-type people in this country, are they not in the category of sociopaths or psychopaths? Wouldn't they be officially in that category?
I suppose. I think probably a lot of people in the Bush administration can be put in that category as well.
Yeah, okay. I'm just flaming mad from all this wasted money, all this money that's needed for people dealing with domestic violence and what we need for rehabilitation of people in prisons and drug and rehabilitation for drug and alcohol and for better schools. It just makes me flaming mad that these scumbags and that money is just wasted on scumbags and scumbag activity. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling. I mean, yeah, to think about what this money is spent on expensive restaurants and some of the The bribes included Abramoff giving free meals to this very exclusive restaurant that he ran in Washington, D.C., skyboxes at sporting events because he had investments and financial interests in a bunch of different arenas and teams. And it's just like spending money. The thought actually that this is the kinds of things that buys government favors is all these kinds of frivolous but very expensive enticements, and it does make you wonder about the values that run this country. Anyway, we're talking about the great shyster, Jack Abramoff. Give a call, 503-231-8187. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Didn't Abramoff, when he pocketed that money, he bought several cruise ships, gambling ships?
Yeah, well, I was talking about that earlier. Yeah, what he did actually, though he didn't buy the cruise ships with his own money. This was another very interesting story. This was back in 2000. He bought Sun Cruise Casinos from a guy named Gus Boutros, who was had this very successful line of casino cruise ships in Florida. But he had to sell his business interest because, or controlling interest, because he was not an American national, as it turned out. I don't know the details of what the Florida law
is. But he also mysteriously died.
Yes, he did, yeah. And so the first thing was that Abramoff did not come up with his own money. He leveraged a $60 million loan to buy this casino cruise ship line.
Nice.
But he faked a $27 million wire. He and this guy, Adam Keaton, but they didn't really have the money. So they were raised the money on false pretenses.
Well, so he took money from the Indian tribes and gave it to anti-casino lobbying groups. I'm not a big proponent of casinos, and you know, I guess lobbyists are not exactly known for their ethics. But, I mean, Abramoff was purported to be a very Christian man.
No. He's an Orthodox Jew.
Oh, I'm sorry. A very religious man.
Yes. He, along with his friend Ralph Reed, you know, who's an evangelical Christian. Yeah, we can see. And Grover Norquist, who I also...
So being a very religious man didn't stop him from lying, cheating, and stealing.
Oh, not at all. Well, I mean, look at some of the, you know, the very religious Jews in Israel that are doing horrible things to the Palestinians.
Yeah.
And the people who are doing these settlements. And, you know, unfortunately, Judaism is no different from other religions, that the fundamentalists and the Orthodox, extreme Orthodox adherents of that religion have no more scruples than the fundamentalists who are Christian or who are Islamic or whatever, that this is, religion is used to hide a whole lot of devious things.
Amazing.
Oh, isn't it amazing?
Well, I don't understand how, I mean, this complete lack of ethics. If you're taking money from a tribe who is trying to build a casino and you're giving it to the anti-casino groups, I mean...
Well, what was really weird is that there were tribes that were, like, there'd be a tribe working with the anti-casino group to stop this other tribe that they saw as competition.
So
you can sort of see, like, for instance, the tribe, and it slipped my mind...
Choctaw.
No, I'm thinking about in Oregon, Spirit Mountain. I'm trying to remember the tribe that...
Grand Ronde.
Okay, so they really don't want to see Warm Springs put a casino in Cascade Locks.
Right.
So it would be the equivalent kind of thing where, I mean, and Abramoff is not working here, and he hasn't given any money to the tribes in Oregon, as far as I know. But it would be as if somebody were giving money to the Grand Ronde to work in concert with anti-gambling organizations to stop the Warm Springs tribe from putting... A confederated tribes from putting a casino in Cascade Locks.
Right.
So it'd be that kind of thing. But then at the same time, they would be also taking money from Warm Springs, pretending that they're going to be advocating for them in Congress. So he was like working both all these tribes against each other and the anti-gambling groups. In fact, some of them are just fronts for Tom DeLay and Abramoff and other political. Movers and shakers.
Right. And these tribes are very, very poor for the most part. I mean, once they get a gambling casino, then they have a chance to build some, you know, health clinics and schools. But, I mean, that is money that's really hard, came by the hard way.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And the fact, I mean, the reason why the tribes were willing to pay someone like Abramoff so much money is that they believe, I think, unfortunately, that their financial future is dependent upon being able to have casinos. I mean, the reality of it is at some point they're probably going to saturate the market. I mean, and that's one of the concerns, I think, too, with the Warm Springs Casino in Cascade Locks.
Right.
Is how many casinos can a region actually handle before they start just competing with each other?
Right.
I mean, you can say the same thing about Starbucks. I mean, how does Starbucks manage to put stores 8 blocks away from each other and still stay in business? But the cynicism, I think, of pitting the tribes against each other and using anti-gambling organizations as fronts for funneling more money than to use for gambling. It's just, I mean, he was just pitting everybody and taking money from one thing and just using it to support the enemy of the first group that he took the money from.
Well, so how many of Bush's buddies will get indicted before Bush will, some of this will rub off on Bush? I mean, Kenny Boy, everybody distanced themselves as soon as Kenny Boy got indicted.
Well, they are distancing themselves from Abramoff. I mean, I read that there was a fundraiser last week that Tom DeLay was at, and he did not put Abramoff on, or he was there, I guess, I can't remember which one. They did not sit on the, you know, the big head table together. They weren't on the stage together because DeLay does not want to be seen with Abramoff now. Of course, a lot of people don't want to be seen with DeLay either at this point. But Bush, for some reason, is, I mean, all he's saying is he never met Abramoff. He doesn't know Abramoff and doesn't acknowledge that he received a huge amount of money from Abramoff both in 2000 and 2004. So Abramoff's paper trail, I think, is more damning than anything in the memories of any of the people who have received a lot of money from him.
So Abramoff may do time, but who else will? I mean,
well,
DeLay, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, DeLay very likely may do time. Robert Ney in Ohio, who's really, you know, he's this right-wing Republican in Ohio who probably was, for all I know, elected illegally, possibly even. And he's really, he's received a huge amount of money from Abramoff and really tied up, you know, really, and done his bidding a lot. And so he's definitely under scrutiny. Conrad Burns, who's a Republican senator from Montana, received an awful lot of money. He's also being investigated. Representative John D. T. Doolittle is another one. I think he's from California, and I don't recall where he's from, actually. And he's another one who's also being investigated. And then there are people in government agencies like David Safarvian, who was a former OMB contracting official. He's been indicted on charges of lying. And L. Stephen Griles, who used to be the number two official in the Interior Department, is under investigation. And he stepped down from the Interior Department, immediately began lobbying for the groups that he was supposedly regulating. So he's a very suspicious guy, and there's a lot of scrutiny of him last year on Bill Moyers Now. So he's somebody that is definitely being watched. So I think that the connections actually, and then, of course, another person, people who aren't in elected office but are very close to the government, are Ralph Reed, who used to be the head of the Christian Coalition. And he's got hundreds of thousands of dollars from Abramoff and did a whole lot of stuff around this whole scam around the casinos. And Grover Norquist, who has close ties to Abramoff and also received a huge amount of money for, quote, consulting. And he's somebody who has been really controlling the agenda in Washington for a number of years and had a lot to do with building up this Republican control of Congress. So these are people that I think are under a lot of close scrutiny and maybe indicted as well.
Good show, Barbara.
Okay, thanks for calling. And number to call is 503-231-8187. We're talking about the scandal surrounding Jack Abramoff. And also, since we've been talking about this pretty much for an hour, it'd be nice to talk some about domestic spying and the way that the Bush has set the National Security Agency on task of spying on U.S. citizens. And if you want to talk about either subject, give a call at 503-231-8187. And it's about 24 minutes before 9 o'clock here on Locus Focus. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
The Bush administration understands that there is a great possibility that there are suitcase nukes loose in this country. They could, Al-Qaeda could set off suitcase nukes simultaneously in New York, Chicago, L.A., Atlanta, killing millions of people. That is what they are trying to prevent.
What does that have to do with Jack Abramoff bilking?
No, you just said that you wanted to talk about the wiretap.
Okay, well, actually, how do you know that there are suitcase nukes lurking with Al-Qaeda operators?
There is a very good possibility.
Well, okay, is it? Yeah,
The Russians say that there are 200 suitcase nukes missing out of the former Soviet Union.
Okay, well, anyway, I mean, it sounds a little bit like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and that was used as a pretense for going to war there, and we saw where that went and how flimsy
what
that evidence
true,
was.
Though?
Well, I would say that there's better ways to deal with that. In fact, people in the NSA, a person who was interviewed by Amy Goodman yesterday in Democracy Now!, was saying that the kinds of surveillance, illegal surveillance, that the Bush administration is encouraging actually prevents the NSA from doing its job of protecting us from exactly those things. And somebody else, I read a description of describing the kinds of surveillance that was going on as like the belief being that if you're trying to find a needle in a haystack, the way to do it is to add more hay. And that, in fact, that this kind of surveillance program is not going to help us actually find the people who might be doing things that are dangerous and life-threatening to the American population. But, in fact, they're going to make it harder to find these people because, instead, a lot of innocent people get caught up in these huge dragnets. So that's my answer to that.
May I have one last statement?
You may have one last statement.
I believe that the leadership of the Democratic Party is so obsessed with power that they know that they are placing the people in this country in harm's way by preventing the NSA from doing its job. And so
this is not the NSA's job, actually.
So that they can blame the Bush administration for not doing enough to protect the American citizens.
Well, you're even more paranoid than people on the left who think that September 11th was a plot of Dick Cheney and George Bush's. So I guess you guys can all get together and, you know, spin your conspiracy theories together. But I don't think that you have much evidence for anything that you're saying, and it might be helpful.
I do have evidence.
Well, you haven't presented it now, and I mean, I think that the other important thing is that in a country where people do not have civil liberties, it makes it that much easier for, I think, the country to fall prey to the kinds of terrorist attacks that you're afraid of. I think when people are living in so much fear, they, in fact, have less safety than when they have a certain amount of freedom and lack of fear about their own personal safety, and then they're a lot more likely to want to help their neighbors and look out for each other. And I think that this whole climate of fear, which is like everybody holding up in their houses, makes us much more vulnerable than if we were a country that was really looking outside of ourselves and really looking towards really strengthening our communities.
Is that why progressives are fear-mongering about Bush doing wiretapping?
I don't think we're fear-mongering. I think the fear-mongering
is... Yes, you are.
Okay, well, anyway, thanks for calling. We've got about another 20 minutes here on the show. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We're talking about the Jack Abramoff scandal today, as well as I do want to have an intelligent conversation about the NSA wiretapping that's been going on. It is always interesting to talk to somebody like the last caller who... I guess believes those things that the I'll call them the fearmongers flood us with, but I'd like to see any kind of evidence that it was necessary to it's necessary to tap the phones and emails of honest law-abiding citizens in this country in hopes that you're going to capture a few quote terrorists, and that I don't believe that that's the motivation of the Bush administration to do this, and that every time Bush. I mean, the other thing that I'd like to hear people from the right counter is how Bush keeps stepping on himself and contradicting himself, and that he has lied so much and then lied to cover up his lies over and over again. And it's all documented. It's even in the media, except the media doesn't seem to make the connections. There were print that he says something in 2002, and then he contradicts himself in 2004, and then he contradicts himself last week once again. And I'm sure he'll be doing a lot more of that in the coming year. So I want to give a call. You can call at 503-231-8187. It's 19 minutes before 9 o'clock on KBOO. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Barb.
Hi.
Hey, two things I wanted to get back to about the casinos. But as far as your previous caller goes, it's a non-story over on the right-wing media, the radio stations, and for their bigger audience and for their smaller audience, the dedicated right-wingers like the fellow who called, it's a blame the other guy sort of a theory that they toss around to inflame people, you know.
Well, actually, you know, I have this image when I was talking to that guy, you know, and when somebody's being confronted with the truth, they stick their fingers in the air, and they stick their fingers in their ears, and they start, and their tongue out, and they start going, nah, 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 like they don't want to hear what's really going on.
Well, I think that they have, they get together and they theorize about what's wrong, and the instigators of these theories make it look like it is the fault of the liberals, and the right has nothing to blame there at all, and that's where all it goes. But there is, you know, I did want to have bring up two other things with you about the casinos. May I?
Sure.
Okay. I recently, for the first time, got to go out to Caneta. I don't know. It's a real popular place, I guess. I've seen other casinos, here and there, the ones out in the coast, Lincoln City, and some of them look like big Walmart stores surrounded by parking lots, just kind of an assault on the land. Some of them, I don't know. But the one out in the Warm Springs casino there at Caneta is built into the landscape like it was built with a consideration for nature. They didn't want to commercialize it, and it's more than just a casino, and it's kind of a small casino. It's not a dedicated giant casino. It's a small casino with a lodging that's around it, and it has the pools. And so I really respect the Warm Springs tribe for taking that much care in building this facility. So I wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and actually the one that they're planning in Cascade Locks is similar kinds of design and a philosophy. I mean, I think that, and this is, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the casinos. I mean, there's the casino with the Seven Feathers in Canyonville, which is like the worst kind of Las Vegas casino. And then there's the Warm Springs Casino and Spirit Mountain, which are a whole other.
Well, my other point about it is a little closer to you, what your issue, and that is, that Abramoff, where he pitted the two tribes against each other, right?
Well, actually, he did it repeatedly with a bunch of different tribes.
Tribes, right. Well, that to me, I think that's standard sort of a GOP practice where they divide people. Nations, Iran and Iraq during that war, they were pitted against each other. We armed both sides. It's a tactic, divide and conquer. And even between the right and the left, the message, the rhetoric is designed to hurt both sides of an issue, a debate, or, contrasting philosophies. So the Republican tactic to win is divide and conquer, and they're using it with the Indian tribes, in that case with the Abramoff this situation, which is a non-issue. We're not talking about it over on the right wing. We're talking about other things. Anyway, may I let you go with that?
Sure.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, well, good. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And number to call is 503-231-8187. We're talking about the scandal of 2006. It's probably... I think that we're actually just seeing the very beginning of how big the scandal is, that it's going to be reaching into every, corner of the Republican Party and many, many corners of the national Republican control of the United States. I was reading this morning the Oregonian. I didn't have time to read the whole article, but it looks like the Republican Party of Oregon received quite a bit of money from Abramoff. Democratic Party of Oregon, surprise, didn't receive any. And one of the things that Bush said right on, early on was it was equal money, that the money was spread equally around Democrats and Republicans, and so this is not a Republican scandal, it's a national scandal. Well, the reality of it is the money was like at least two-thirds, one-third going to Republicans versus Democrats, and that the money that went to Democrats was in much smaller amounts to individual Democrats, and I think almost exclusively came from tribes, and quite likely had very little to do with Abramoff, because these were tribes historically have donated to Democratic candidates and causes. And so these were tribes often that probably had already had relationships with the candidates or the party that they were giving money to. But that what did happen was that the tribes that Abramoff was working with shifted their giving patterns from having given primarily to Democrats before working with Abramoff, started giving overwhelmingly to Republicans after that. So even though Democrats have received small amounts of money, they are pittance compared to the amounts of money that the Republicans have received, and also have not been able, there's been no direct connections between money that Abramoff's tribes gave to Democratic candidates or representatives and any influence peddling that actually happened there. The people who've been on the take have been so far exclusively Republicans or people within the Bush administration. So I think we got time for another caller or so. So hello, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, the caller that with the conspiracy theories and didn't, that thinks that the NSA's job is to spy on Americans, he might want to read the Constitution, and he might want to read the Posse Comitatus Act.
He also might want to read the mission of the NSA, which this guy who was a former NSA official on Amy Goodman show yesterday was mentioning. It's against the NSA mission to spy on American citizens.
Well, yeah, and like I said, there's also the Posse Comitatus Act, and which is really, and I was just really wondering where that person was coming from, because that's not a right-wing position. To advocate for spying on Americans by big government.
Well, it's a position of certain parts of the right. It's actually a position of the fascist right as opposed to the libertarian right. We're seeing that a lot of opposition from towards the Patriot Act and a lot of opposition to these revelations about the NSA spying have come from a certain part of the conservative movement in this country, which is a libertarian conservative right.
Well, the true conservatives, the Goldwater conservatives,
right.
would never support the Patriot Act.
Of course.
But anyway, Abramoff, let's talk about him for a minute. Now, I've been listening off and on. I was in and out of the car for a while earlier this morning. I didn't hear you touch on, that according to Mad Cow, there's connections between drug connections in Abramoff and... who is the guy from San Diego?
Oh, the guy just got who had stepped down from the House.
Yeah, and maybe maybe the other guy from Southern California that you mentioned about 20 minutes ago on the show. But do you know anything about the drug money connection there?
I don't. I do know there's connections between Abramoff and the guy from San Diego, and they think that had more to do with. Well, that guy was doing all these weird real estate deals.
Yeah, but I can't remember the specifics of it. I tried to.
Yeah, I don't know much. I don't know anything about that. I feel a little uncomfortable inflaming that. It's quite possible. I mean, I think anything's possible with Abramoff, but there's right now so much. I mean, the mob hit, I think, is something where there's a lot more direct evidence connecting his people to an actual murder, and that is being pursued. And until I know more about any kind of drug connection, I don't feel real comfortable talking about it. But I'd be interested in finding out. So if anybody knows about it or knows where to point me, I'd be very happy to do the research.
Yeah, and I just want to make one more remark, and then I'll get off the air. When people are talking about the casino and the gorge, you know, it's the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, and people say, well, they're not from the gorge. Well, duh, yeah, they are.
Yes.
They just got killed and pushed over, and the survivors got pushed over there to the Warm Springs. But, and the people from the gambling was a big social part of Indian culture, and people from the coastal communities and from the plains communities would meet for trade and to gamble in the gorge for thousands of years. And I just think it's... I don't know, it's way beyond insensitive. It's arrogant, and belies a total lack of Indian culture, to come up and say that there's no reason for them to be doing this in the gorge, regardless of the fact that, the money is being actually used to create, social services such as schools and health clinics that they were promised by treaties that have never been fulfilled.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for calling. And that was a very good point at the end. And I think this is actually, we're going to have to deal with the Gorge Casino one of these days soon, because it's certainly a heated issue and I think needs a lot more illustration about what's really going on. I think people have a kind of knee-jerk response and don't really understand the depth of what it's about. Anyway, but today we'll finish up talking about Jack Abramoff, the great scandal of 2006. And if you're also interested, we could talk a little bit more about the NSA program of snooping on Americans. So give a call. We've got about another 5 minutes here at 503-231-8187. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Barbara.
Good morning.
I just want to say about the call. I got a comment about the conspiracy caller. He's a familiar voice on the air, KBOO, and I really appreciate that he calls, because what it gives is a lot of insight to the man that I've heard describe himself as deeply religious. And what I hear coming from that guy is a lot of anger and hate towards one particular group, and, which he claims that the group that he's directing that at has. And as far as the way it connects to what you're talking about, it seems to me like one of the last cards that this administration and these people that have really kind of gotten a hold of our government is the fear card. And I think it's in our best interest not to, just be level-headed like I appreciate that you are and other people that I hear on the radio, to just really kind of question our own fear-based thinking and just get down to facts and common sense and solutions. So I'll just end with that, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks for calling. Actually, I just was looking at one of these articles I have here just to kind of give a little bit more specifics. I've been, I think, a little bit inaccurate about the tribes that Abramoff represented. So the ones I have here, there are three of his former clients, and these are the ones who are among the top 10 political donors among Indian tribes between 2001 and 2004. And they are the Saginaw Chippewa Tribe of Michigan, the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians, and the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians of California. There were others, I mean, and I know that the big deal casino issue had to do with the Choctaw Indians, but I've forgotten about the Saginaw Chippewa tribe as well. So he actually has represented a bunch of tribes all around the country. But those are the big three donors that are involved in a lot of the scandal now. I think we've got time for another caller or two, so let's see if we've got another caller up. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I've waited. What I see missing here is a big historical picture, I think, of De Tocqueville's Democracy in America, Toynbee's Rise and Fall of Civilization, and science fiction, James Blish's Theories in Flight, Arthur C. Clarke's Foundation. The idea being that there are cycles that go through time, and people are somewhat captive of them, although they can still choose options. I've watched this since actually the Johnson era. Well, actually go clear back to Nixon with the vicuna coat, and then you watch Johnson when he came into power, and you saw that while there are many great legislative things going on, he achieved that through his enormous power as Speaker of the House and knowing all the ins and outs, and then Nixon with his paranoia. And so while I certainly rail against Bush and his cronies, what they are is the bacteria preying on the bothered politic when things have gotten really rotten and corrupt and have been for a long time. We do all need to rail together and join, you know, both left and right and preserve this great American experiment. I'm really afraid that it may have tipped too far and we'll find ourselves sliding into a plutocracy, very much like Perón in Argentina. But I want to encourage you and keep exposing this stuff. KBOO's a wonderful, lively news, and I love listening to your program, Barbara. You've been on many years. You and Marlena Smith are great advocates of the people's rights. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Thanks for calling, and we got time for one last phone call. So hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Gordon Smith fell for Jack Abramoff's.
Yeah, I noticed that this morning. Yeah.
Corruption. I wonder if how much Smith had influence on the casino activities in the gorge as a result of connection with Abramoff. I just don't think you can say Smith and Abramoff in the same sentence often enough. He obviously, Gordon Smith, doesn't have any, sense of. He can't spot a fraud, what's his wisdom?
I think we're going to find that a lot of Republicans like Smith got money.
And then I had another comment on you're looking for what their motive is in spying on Americans. Actually, I don't think they were headed in any direction. It was just installing the hardware. Now, to get it running, they'll think of a reason later.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling. And on that note, I got to get out of here. It's time for the bike show. I'll be back next week, and lots more to talk about. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to have another installment of the Whole Communities Radio Project, and we're going to be looking at the importance of cultural institutions in creating healthy, sustainable communities. And Then I'm going to be actually out of the country for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be in Venezuela at the World Social Forum and traveling around with Patrick Engstrom Poor of KBOO, and we're going to be doing having some radio fun around the country of Venezuela. So a lot of us, it turns out, are going down to Venezuela. I keep getting calls and emails from people. So I think there's going to be quite a large Portland contingent at the World Social Forum. And I'm actually, as soon as I get off the air, going to talk to Kathleen about how we can do some radio live from Venezuela. So anyway, there'll be a lot of exciting things coming up at the end of the month. Stay tuned for the bike show and all kinds of great programming throughout the day here on KBOO. And we're going to go out with a piece of music by Justin Valley Trio, to sort of sum up what we've been just listening to, and this piece of music is called The Truth.
Ni marana ya nzala ni marana le